This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, everyone, welcome to the People Speak Radio Show here on VBS Radio. Another great guest tonight. In fact, as you've noticed, I'm sure, over the past several weeks we've had 9/11-related guests, particularly because we're heading into, as of Thursday, the 7th anniversary of that fateful day, so we've been focusing heavily on 9/11, something we can't forget, especially since the perpetrators, regardless what side of the argument you fall on, are still walking the streets. There have been no arrests of Bin Laden. As far as we know, Bin Laden has disappeared off the face of the earth. We don't hear any more about him. Bush himself has even said, he's not in my thoughts much anymore. I'm not worried about him, which is astonishing if he's supposed to be the guilty party behind the worst crime ever perpetrated on American soil in the history of this country. So this is something we can't afford to ignore. The party that has the most blood on its hand, that has that seems to have gained the most from these attacks, is in fact the Bush administration. And if you, like myself and many other researchers, believe that they were the guilty party, well, obviously the real perpetrators are still walking the streets, aren't they? So today we're going to have, again, David Griffin on. He's the author of actually many books pertaining to 9/11. His most famous one is The New Pearl Harbor, but he's got a new edition of that book that just came out, or a second version of it, I guess you could say, along with many other interesting...
Well, it's actually a brand new book.
Okay, so it's totally... Well, are you talking about the...
It's called The New Pearl Harbor Revisited.
Oh, okay, because you've also got the 9/11 Contradictions book.
That's right. That was the previous one. But this one's just coming out this week.
Oh, okay.
And it's a commentary on the New Pearl Harbor. So the idea is you would read them together, read the first chapter of the New Pearl Harbor, then read the first chapter of New Pearl Harbor Revisited and see all that's happened in the meantime.
Okay, great. Well, let me formally introduce you. Again, this is David Ray Griffin, one of the best and most read authors out there on this subject. And, of course, because of that, you've stirred a lot of controversy, and so we're great to have you on. You've brought a lot of awareness to a lot of people that formerly had not known the problems with the official story. So welcome, Dr. Griffin.
Thank you, Charles. Good to be back with you again.
Yeah, so the new book, it's due out again when? Another week? 2 weeks?
Well, it was sent from the publisher to bookstores about four days ago or so, so it should be hitting Amazon in maybe 3 or 4 more days. And
okay,
it
great.
Should
so
be on bookstores on the East Coast should have it already.
So how does this compare now for those who have read, The New Pearl Harbor? What are some of the main features we can look for with this new book that you're going to be discussing?
Well, just think of all that's happened in the meantime since the New Pearl Harbor came out at the very beginning of 2004. We then had the 9/11 Commission report in July of that year, and I wrote a book on that called The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. Then the following year, NIST came out with its report on the World Trade Center towers, and I discussed that in my 2007 book, Debunking 9/11 Debunking. I waited until after they had put out a response to questions that had been raised to the commission, and then, of course, we had the report on the Pentagon. And then we've had lots of new developments within the 9/11 truth community, the major thing being the enormous addition of intellectuals and professionals into the movement, so that now we have, you know, they used to say, well, you know, all the experts support the official story. That is absolutely not true now, by order of several hundred, that we have firefighters for 9/11 Truth. That's the newest one. Architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. Pilots for 9/11 Truth. Veterans for 9/11 Truth. And then we have lots of former intelligence officers, CI officers, and so on. So just an enormous amount of professional expertise. And so my new book has benefited from that, particularly with regard to the World Trade Center, because we now have all these physicists, architects, and engineers challenging the official story.
Right, right. So in spite of all of their desperate attempts to try to save this sinking ship, they're not doing too well, are they? It's not looking good for them.
Actually, and this was the point of my book, two books ago, the Debunking 9/11 Debunking, that in the August of 2006, they decided to try a new tactic. Rather than ignoring us, which they'd been doing up till then, they decided to counterattack and disprove what they call the conspiracy theories. Of course, they like to ignore the fact that theirs is the original and the most outrageous conspiracy theory. But that aside, they put out a bunch of documents to try to beef up the official story by tearing us down. And the most famous of those was the book that put out by Popular Mechanics, which is really a semi-official document cited by the State Department. And what I argued in Debunking 9/11 Debunking was that this attempt really backfired, because up till then, people could say, well, you know, you all have raised your questions and made your charges, and you know, they could respond easily if they wanted to. They just don't want to dignify your crazy charges with an answer. Mm. But, you know, they would be able to blow you away if they tried. Well, here they tried. And they showed, I mean, they were just ridiculous failures. The new document put out by NIST and attempts to bolster the official story about why the planes were not intercepted, and now we've shown that they've undermined their own story. So one of the biggest things that's developed is and I report this in the new book, that in 2004, unbeknownst to us at the time, they changed their story about the so-called cell phone calls from all the flights. You know, that was the main evidence that they gave that there were really hijackers on the planes, was all these passengers and flight attendants had called, and especially on cell phones, and talk to relatives or co-workers. And we were arguing those calls were technologically impossible. You can't make, you couldn't make high altitude calls from airliners back in 2001. The technology has just recently been invented for that. And, you know, Popular Mechanics was saying, oh, that's crazy. You know, you could make calls from 30,000, 40,000 feet, no problem. Unbeknownst to them, even, the FBI had withdrawn their claim. They did tell the 9/11 Commission, and we didn't notice that the 9/11 Commission did not claim any high-altitude cell phone calls, but they disguised it so that they wouldn't upset the official story, let people keep believing that. But now in 2006, when the FBI had to put out a report to the Moussaoui trial, they spilled the beans and said none of those cell phone calls were really cell phone calls. And they even claimed, and this should have been the screaming headline, that they even admitted that the two famous calls from Barbara Olson to Ted Olson never happened.
Yeah, that there's no confirmation. They cannot...
Well, they not only didn't said there's no confirmation, they said they didn't happen. They said Barbara Olson attempted a call. I don't know how they figured that out, but that's what they said. She attempted a call. It was unconnected. and therefore lasted 0 seconds. And yet Ted Olson told CNN and the FBI that he received 2 calls from her, each one of which lasted about a minute.
And he contradicted himself every time he gave the accounts, too.
Yeah, he went back and forth between whether it was a cell phone call or an airphone call. But, you know, one could say, well, he just didn't know and he was guessing. But here, the FBI, even though they interviewed him and took his testimony, they have come out and flat out said those calls didn't happen. And,
amazing.
You know, the FBI is part of the Department of Justice. And so they said the former Solicitor General for the Department of Justice gave an account that was not true.
Incredible.
And his account was, of course, very important to getting the whole so-called war on terror started, that Barbara Olson, this very popular CNN commentator, had been killed by these evil Muslims.
So what do you think, Dr. Griffin? It's obvious there were no hijackers. That whole thing was completely made up. But, you know, I'm starting to wonder if there were even passengers.
Well, that's a very good question, too. And it's one I don't know what happened. I don't think I always talk about Flight 11, the one that hit the North Tower, Flight 175, the one that hit the South Tower. Sometimes I say reportedly. But in notes in the back of the book, I said I'm just not raising the question of whether these really were the planes that hit. You know, maybe they were switched. There's some evidence for that. And that would fit with the Operation Northwood scenario.
Sure.
Where they wanted to, back in 62, the military wanted a pretext to attack Cuba. And so they were going to kill American citizens, blame Cubans for it. And one of the scenarios was they would pretend to kill Americans. They would send some American college students out over Cuba, switch the plane, send up a drone, then attack it and say that Cuba had shot this plane down.
Mm-hmm.
So that may have been what happened on 9/11 with flights 11 and 175. I don't get into that, but I certainly don't reject those who make that claim.
Certainly a possibility.
I think they're probably right.
Yeah. But in any case, we have no evidence whatsoever of any of the alleged 19 hijackers boarding at Logan, boarding at Newark. And, of course, as you know, the only pictures from Dulles are highly questionable because there's no date or time stamp, and there's... You know, one of the people named is Salem El Hamzy, who's been found to be alive.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, a new thing I do in this book, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, is go through every one of the alleged bits of evidence that there were hijackers on the plane and show that every one of them had to have been fabricated. And beyond the fact, then, that there's no evidence that hijackers were on the planes, you know, people can still come back and say, well, absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence, so maybe there still were. Well, actually, there is evidence that there were no hijackers, and I tell this famous story about the dog that didn't bark. This is a story, short story about Silver Blaze, and he was a racehorse who disappeared the night before a big race. And the Scotland Yard inspector thought there had been an intruder had come and stolen the horse. Well, Sherlock Holmes said, there's the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime. And the inspector says, well, the dog didn't do anything. And Holmes says, that was the curious incident. And so it became known as the dog that didn't bark, because had there been an intruder, the dog would have barked. Well, likewise, as you know, on these planes, the pilots have a transponder right by their hand. And if there's any sign the plane is somebody's trying to hijack it, they just punch in the hijack code, 7500. And this is called squawking the hijack code. And the people on the ground at the FAA would see that it was and would notify the military. Well, in each case, all four planes, two pilots on both planes, none of them did it. And people say, well, maybe they didn't have time. Well, if you believe the recording for Flight 93, it says that hijackers were trying to get in, the pilot's going, "Mayday, mayday," and then 30 seconds later, he again screams, "Mayday, mayday." So he was still conscious and coherent, and in all those 30 seconds, neither one of them did the thing they're most trained to do, put in the hijack code.
Right.
So just as the absence of an intruder was proved by the dog that didn't bark, the absence of hijackers is proved by the pilots who didn't squawk.
Yeah. Very strange. But nobody questions this, of course, and you're crazy when you do question it. But, I mean, the whole thing stinks to high heaven. One of my favorites is when they say that, when you ask, where was our military? Why weren't they intercepting and or shooting down? I mean, a total of almost 2 hours went by. And they'll say, they were in Cold War mode still, and they were expecting an attack from outside, not inside. I mean, how heinously ridiculous is that?
Yeah, even if that were plausible with regard to the first plane, the second one, the third one, the fourth
yeah.
one, how long does it take them to wake up, And, all of these things they've made up. First of all, I mean, what really happened there, and one of the major differences between this book and the original, the New Pearl Harbor, as such, is that at that time I was telling the first story that the military told, which said, the FAA notified us, but they were kind of late notifying us, and we just didn't have time to get our planes up, and we tried to get there, but, we were just 70 miles late, 70 miles out when the plane hit, and we almost made it, but couldn't quite do it. Well, as I reported in the New Pearl Harbor, these early guys who got into the 9/11 Truth Movement long before I did had done the math, and they said, doesn't work. Even if the FAA was as late as you said, you still could have gotten there. Well, now the 9/11 Commission admitted that specifically with regard to Flight 77, that if it had been notified, if the military was notified at 9:24, as the military said in its report that came out 1 week after 9/11, there was plenty of time to get there, even if the planes had to come all the way from Langley, if we accept the ridiculous idea that there were no planes on alert at Andrews,
yeah.
right next to Washington.
Even
then, you could have made it in time. Well, the 9/11 Commission admits that. So what do? They just make up a new story and say that, all these years the military's been saying they were notified and couldn't get there in time. Actually, that's not true. The truth is they weren't notified at all. And so they accuse the military of lying and of telling an absurd lie that would make them look bad. We can understand when people would lie to make themselves look good, but here... Mm-hmm. The lie was supposed to be, the FAA told us, and we didn't get there anyway. They didn't look very good. The new story is, the FAA didn't notify you at all. Well, that gets the military completely off the hook, and supposedly they didn't want to tell the truth. They went, as if the military would have wanted to protect the FAA instead of passing the buck. So they just created this brand new story. And fabricated the so-called NORAD tapes. That's my hypothesis, and I give a lot of support for it. And pawned this new story off on the American public, and now that settles that. The military couldn't get there because, they didn't know. And of course, the FAA had committed the biggest dereliction of duty in American history, and not a single person was fired or even reprimanded.
Yeah,
we're supposed
that's
to
another amazing
that.
Thing. Mm-hmm. I used to have an English teacher in high school, had a really good saying that sums this whole thing up. He said, better to keep your mouth shut and let people only think you're a liar than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
That's right.
You know? And that's what we got to hear. Incredible.
Right.
The more I'm appreciative to the NIST for their two reports now, the one, of course, that just came out a few weeks ago on Building 7. I'm glad, because they're making the official story look more like the bunk that it is than it ever was before.
Yeah, before this new report came out on Building 7, of course, they waited till the Bush-Cheney administration is just about ready to leave office, we hope. And but when you read it, it just is beyond belief. As somebody wrote to me, you know, they're just showing complete contempt for us. They didn't even try to make it look plausible.
No.
Because, as I wrote back to somebody, well, you know, what they said was, you know, there's no way to make this plausible. So we don't even have to try. We just have to put out something, and the media will buy it. And sure enough, they did. You saw the headlines on all the TV shows, Mystery of Building 7 Solved.
Yeah.
Mystery
yeah,
solved.
Right.
Well, read the document, and what you find is, first of all, they just lie about everything. They fudge the temperatures enormously to try to claim that this could have caused
You know, if they called it mystery solved with a question mark, I wouldn't have contested that. I would have been,
That's
mystery
right.
solved?
And then, you know, they've admitted all along that the fire... Because the fire, you know, they're no longer claiming that it was diesel fuel. This is what everybody's been throwing at us all the time. Oh, there was this enormous amount of diesel fuel in there, and it got set on fire and just caused this enormous fire that went on for many, many hours and all that. Now they're saying, well, no, the diesel fuel didn't play a role.
They also backtracked on the damage done to the WTC-facing side. That was, like, their main argument, and now that's been thrown out as well by their own selves.
That's right, because it didn't work. You've got a symmetrical collapse, and here you had a gash allegedly in the front of the building, which would have caused the building to fall over frontwards, if anything. Mm. And so they realized that wouldn't work, and besides that, they really didn't have the photographic evidence. And so they just went in and said, well, it was just ordinary combustibles in the rooms, and of course there weren't a whole lot of them. They would burn up in 20 minutes and then the fire would move, and that's what they've been saying all along. And now all of a sudden we get this report and we learn, oh no, the fire lasted in places 3.5 to 4 hours, and that's what caused the thermal expansion, which moved a beam. And then it caused one crucial, critical beam to collapse. And then the stupid people who built the building didn't realize that there was that one critical beam, column. And if it went, all the other 80 columns would collapse.
Well, that's interesting, because that building got an award in early 2001 for being the most sturdily reinforced.
These were wonderfully built buildings. They were extremely... redundant, as they call it. You know, they could absorb all sorts of insults, and the load would be shifted. And yet,
you know, if there's even half truth to what they're saying, why aren't they calling for the immediate disassemblage of all steel-rise buildings, high-rise buildings in the world, because they're all extremely dangerous?
Yeah, of course, there is a controversy going on now, because the NIST, you know, had to say something. They had to say there was some problem here, so they're making recommendations to make buildings safer, and the building industry is fighting back and saying, well, those are far too expensive, because they all know this is all nonsense, that they're being forced to make tremendous expenditures for something that isn't necessary, because these buildings were brought down by explosives, and most people aren't planning to have their buildings brought down by explosives unless it's time for the building to go. And then I had predicted in my chapter, in my first chapter of World Trade Center, of New Pearl Harbor Revisited, what NIST would do, and I had predicted they were going to use the gash and I didn't know about the diesel for sure, but that part of my prediction was wrong, but the main part was right, which is that they would just continue to ignore all the evidence that contradicts their fire theory. So there's no discussion.
These are PhD-endowed government scientists. Yeah, like you said, you know, you think they would have put a little more time. They certainly had plenty of time that has gone by. You think they would have put in some more effort into this, especially where the report is so extensive and how much money did they spend on this, you know?
That's right. They've actually been working on it off and on for 5 years. They lie about it and say they only worked on it 3 years. But even if it were 3 years and you've got all these people working on it, they could have come up with something better than this. You know, one of the things that has come out and that I report in the new book is that a NIST whistleblower sort of came forward. He announced himself to Stephen Jones. So Stephen Jones, our leading physicist, has been able to verify that the guy is really who he says he was and all that. He really was working for NIST. But he won't release his name because he's afraid of recriminations.
Well, sure.
And what he has said is that NIST had become totally politicized. It had actually already become somewhat politicized under the Clinton administration, but then under the new Bush administration became wholly politicized, and that they were very concerned, particularly about this report. They assigned one full-time person from the White House to watch over NIST, and so there are three levels that they've got to go through. Everything has to be approved by the Commerce Department. Of course, NIST is not this independent organization. It's just part of the Commerce Department. Therefore, it's part of the Bush-Cheney administration.
Sure, yeah.
And he says that the scientists there are some good scientists, but under the new structure, they're nothing more than hired guns.
Mm.
And they don't like it. They don't like what they're forced to do. But it's their job, it's their livelihood, and so they go ahead and do it, and very unhappily. And so it's a very terrible situation, and nobody should expect any truth to come out of this, because any truth that had been expressed would have been expunged by one of these three layers of censors.
Well, aren't they still refusing to release their computer simulations from the first report dealing with the two main towers?
Oh yeah, they will surely never release those until everybody's dead and buried from this era, because if they would release them, and this is what Stephen Jones, Kevin Ryan, and the ones who are leading the critique of this have pointed out, if they would release these, other scientists could see if they could replicate them. Well, that when you're talking about the physical sciences. Replication is the whole name of the game. Unless something can be replicated by other scientists in other labs, it's not a scientific result. It's just an announcement. Well, all we have from NIST is an announcement, because they will not release anything so that anything could be replicated.
It's amazing. You know, they're still saying that the 9/11 conspiracy theorists are paranoid nuts. But yet, all our research is above board. You know, it's all there for peer review. And yet, NIST, this panel of well, academically endowed scientists, refused to release their findings.
Yeah, and that's another criterion. You know, people were claiming that none of our scientists had papers that were peer reviewed. So now, lo and behold, they've submitted them to some standard peer-reviewed journals, and they've been published. And I report on two of these in my book. And one of them got in the Wire just literally the last day before the book went to press. I got in the report that Kevin Ryan and others had gotten in, which is an amazing report on the fires underneath the Ground Zero there. And so we now have peer-reviewed reports, but nothing that NIST puts out is peer-reviewed. So again, by another basic criterion of science, it's not science. It's right now in the category of announcement, or to put it a little less kindly, propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Can't think of a better word myself. I tell you what, we got to cut for a short break here, but when we get back, I got a whole slew of questions that are coming in through text here. We have some listeners on paltalk.com that are sending their questions through the text. So when we get back, we'll deal with some of these questions and talk some more about your book and some of your other findings. This is fascinating stuff, very important stuff. And again, you got to wonder, folks, why isn't this being discussed in the mainstream media? These are serious questions, serious problems with the official story, and they're totally boycotting this. It's very obvious something is desperately wrong here. So stick with us. Short break. We'll be right back with Dr. David Ray Griffin.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on Earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.com.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of that song.
Okay, welcome back to the People Speak Radio Show here on BBS Radio. The website again is thepeoplespeakradio.net. And again, our guest this evening is Dr. David Ray Griffin. We're talking about the 9/11 attacks. In his great books, he's written a whole series on this subject, but we're talking particularly about his new one, New Pearl Harbor. What is it, Revisited?
Revisited.
Right. By the way, in that book, were you able, that was kind of cutting it close on time there, were you able to address the Building 7 report at all, or had that already gone to press?
No. That, of course, just came out this last week, and it had to go to press about two and a half weeks ago. So I held it as long as I could, but I wanted to get it out by September 11th.
September 11th, sure. Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll be coming out with another one somewhere down the line and going.
Yeah,
that
whether we might come out with an updated edition. We've done that twice before, so we might do that again.
Sure. But anyway, let's go to some of the questions. We've got quite a few that have been coming in here. I'll start with we got a question, John from the Canadian Rockies. He asks Dr. Griffin, would you tell us about the FDNY expert witnesses, if any, the fire department?
Well, there are a whole bunch of experts in the sense that they were there that day, and 503 of them gave oral histories of what they experienced that day, and 118 of these, 503, so about a quarter of them, gave clear testimonies of explosions going off in the buildings. And this is one of the things that both the 9/11 Commission and NIST have consistently covered up, just refused to admit, because they'll say, we found absolutely no evidence that would support the controlled demolition hypothesis. And so Stephen Jones and Kevin and the others wrote to them and said, well, you know, what about all these testimonies? You said there's no evidence. What about all these testimonies? And they quoted a whole bunch of them. And NIST wrote back rather lamely and said, well, we didn't think the preponderance of the testimonies supported the idea. So it was like, well, you had to have 100%, or did you have to have 51%? 25%, when these were volunteered, you know, people weren't asked, did you hear anything that sounded like explosions?
You know,
they
all
volunteered it.
That's like a murder investigator saying, well, I didn't find fingerprints on 97% of every article in the room. I only found them on two articles, so it's not submissible.
Yeah, or only, you know, there were 10 people there, and only 3 of them saw Jones kill Smith. So we don't think the witnesses, you know, that there's sufficient evidence that Jones killed Smith.
Right,
it's
right,
just ridiculous,
right.
Yeah.
It is. You've got to consider every piece of evidence. Gosh. Unreal. Of course, there was Louis Cascioli there. Someone we're trying to get as a guest here on the People Speak Radio. And, you know, he went before the 9/11 Commission. He talked about hearing explosions, and they didn't want to hear it. He got up in disgust. He left.
Yeah, you know, his has become somewhat controversial because he pulled back a little bit and said, well, I didn't say that there were explosions. I said it sounded like there were explosions. But when you read his testimony, because, you know, Popular Mechanics made a big deal of that, and so they used their typical diversionary tactics, ignoring the 118 people otherwise who gave. They just focused on that one and said, you people in the truth movement are lying. You're claiming that Cascioli claimed that there were explosions, and listen to him. He says, I didn't ever claim there were explosions. But if you go look at his testimony, there's no doubt about the fact he was saying,
well,
that.
For crying out loud, if you listen to the transmissions that have been released, you know, there's been another explosion at the tower, a secondary explosion. There's just been another explosion here at the tower. I mean, you know, the live news reports. Local FBI investigators said that they believed there were truck bombs planted in the buildings, and that would account for the explosions being heard here and probably explain why the buildings collapsed the way they did. So, I mean,
and one thing I point out in the book is that all those things were reported on September 11th on TV. Mm. Then on the newspaper, September 12th, they were reported, and they were never mentioned again. They got that so squelched.
Yep.
That news people. So now that the very people who were reporting that, if you try to talk to them about explosions in the building, oh, you're a bunch of conspiracy theorists.
I remember Ann Thompson, MSNBC. She said I was in the corridor, the foyer, you know, the front hall of the North Tower, and there was an explosion. We're all covered in fine dust. 5 minutes later, another one. Suddenly, a marshal came in and said, "You better get out. If there's another one like that, this building might not last."
That's right, yeah.
Incredible. I mean, you can just go on and on with that.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go on to the...
Yeah,
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
The next question here, this is from Mike in California. He's wondering what you got planned for this Thursday, September 11th. Are you going to be speaking anywhere? Or?
You know, the last 2 years, I went to Europe, and that was a good thing to do. But this year, I decided to stay home because what I missed out on last year was doing any radio shows on September 11th. So I'm just staying home, and so far I've got 3 radio shows to do that day.
Oh, wow.
I'll probably have some more pretty soon.
Well, are you busy at... from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern?
Yeah, we can talk later. We can maybe do
sure,
that.
I might give you a call. Yeah, I might have you.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's another question. This is from Sandra in Connecticut. She said, if Bush and Cheney are guilty of allowing or perhaps directly responsible for the 9/11 attacks, what should their penalty be?
You know, obviously there should be a penalty, and for a lot of people in the movement, or at least some people, that's a primary concern, is that that justice in the sense of retributive justice be carried out, and certainly it should. But my major concern is simply to get the truth out and to get the policies reversed. That's the dangerous thing, because I'm just now publishing an essay that's the title is Was America Attacked by Muslims on 9/11? And I point out that of course was the pretext for the attack on Afghanistan and Iraq. We all agree now that using 9/11 to attack Iraq was illegitimate, but everybody seems to agree that using it to attack Afghanistan was legitimate. And even Obama, he says one of the major reasons to get out of Iraq is so that we've got the troops and the resources to go after the people in Afghanistan who really attacked us on 9/11. So the so-called war on terror, which is a war on Muslim countries, is going to continue as long as the official story is believed. So the policy needs to be changed, and that's my concern.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the trampling of our constitutional rights and freedoms. We need to see reversal of, you know, the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act. All of this stuff is turning us.
That's right, and that's what I mean by policy, both the domestic and the foreign
sure.
policy.
Right.
There's a great book out now that's called 9/11 and the Constitution, and it shows how 9/11 was used just to really, really, even worse than I had imagined, undermine our Constitution with regard to torture, rendition, spying, and other things. So all those domestic policies, as well as foreign policies, need to be reversed. And also, not just policies, but attitude. This attitude that Muslims are probably terrorists.
Yeah.
That Islam is an inherently violent religion. In some respects, that is the worst effect of 9/11, that we've defamed a billion members of the human race by 9/11, and to get that attitude reversed.
The BBC did a really good documentary on secret CIA prisons in Eastern Europe and talking about how they were just basically arresting people randomly, Muslims, of course, and torturing the daylights out of them horrifically. I won't even mention on air some of the things they were doing to them, but after several weeks or months of doing this, they would hand them phony confession statements that they told them to read into a microphone, and, they wouldn't torture them anymore. Fake confessions admitting to working with Al-Qaeda's network and, you know, just to make this phony war on terror look legitimate.
That's right, and one of the things I have a long discussion of in the new book is this fact, and that there is a consensus now that that any confessions extracted by torture are suspect, because they do just tell you anything in order to stop the torture.
Yeah.
And everything that the 9/11 Commission used to support the notion that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were behind 9/11 came from the CIA, from people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, who was probably or definitely tortured. And, even some mainstream NBC had a study pointing this out. And yet people keep accepting the 9/11 Commission report as valid, even though that completely undermines it. And, of course, our own FBI has said, we have no evidence that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 9/11. So there are many, many lines of evidence that just completely undermine the official story, but we can't get the mainstream press, of course, to announce any of this.
And how about the Massawi trial? What a fraud that was.
Oh, you know, sure.
He shows up drooling on himself. He's got a stun belt on. He's mumbling senselessly, and his own lawyer and the judge both said you can't trust anything he says. He contradicts himself constantly.
Yeah.
You know, he showed up with two bruises, a black eye. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, I think he probably fell down, you know.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, since you mentioned the BBC, that pushes one of my buttons, and it's nice to know they still do some good reports, but both of their reports on 9/11 have just horrible.
Disgusting.
And I did get in under the wire to discuss this recent report on Building 7, where they gave kind of a preview of what NIST was going to say. And so one thing they do is completely lie about Barry Jennings' testimony. Hess and Jennings, you know, Hess was the corporate counsel, very good friend of Giuliani, who refers to him as Mike.
Yeah.
And they were in Building 7 early that morning and went up to see Giuliani, find the floor 23 is all empty. They're asked, what should we do? And they're told, well, you should get out of the building immediately. So they start, and the elevator won't work, so they run down the stairs. They get down to the sixth floor. Huge explosion knocks the landing out from under them. They just barely hold on, crawl up, get back up on the eighth floor, signal for help, and an hour and a half later, they're rescued. Well, the BBC let Barry Jennings come on and tell that story, but then they put it in a different time slot. That is, instead of the explosion being at a 9:15, as Barry Jennings has said, they put it at 10:28 and say, therefore, it wasn't an explosion. It was just the effects of the North Tower coming down at 10:28. So that is just the grossest distortion you can imagine of somebody's testimony.
Sure. Yeah, it's very blatantly obvious what's going on here, folks. The media are not relating news. They're relating propaganda. And that's every bit as much true in Britain as it is here. Truth does squeak out on occasion, but for the most part, that's all you get is just blatant lies. We got a question here. Dennis in Florida, he's asking, is it true that Stephen Jones found proof of thermate residue on the WTC steel?
That's right, yeah. He got a lot of... Now, just a minute, when he says on the steel, I don't know that Stephen got a piece of steel. What he got was several people sent him ground zero dust.
Dust, yeah.
And from the dust, he did analyses and found the signature, in fact, more than one kind of evidence of, thermate was used.
Yeah, he actually found unignited thermate, too.
Yeah. And that, by the way, story that Kevin, and now Kevin is a chemist, so I give him, I think he's the lead author on that one that came out that I mentioned, that I squeaked in at the last second in the book. And that's what it's about, those mysterious underground fires that went on for months. How could that be? How could steel stay melted? And, you know, and NIST lamely says, well, if there was some melted steel, it was because when the steel was underground and therefore protected from the atmosphere, it got really, really hot, which, if you remember, seventh grade science class, ordinary hydrocarbon fires require oxygen to burn. Otherwise, they go out, and they're claiming that without any oxygen, they got hotter and hotter and hotter. But what the truth is that thermate, this is self-igniting. And so it doesn't need oxygen. So, yes, underground, it can keep going off. And they've shown that even some of the government studies, if you look at them in the right way, show that there had to be self-generating fuel there, and that what they call super thermate is the best candidate.
Yeah, no question. So So the evidence, again, is all there. They're just completely ignoring it. Here's another question. This is from Mary in Ohio. She's wondering, I guess this is for both of us, she's asking, who are we voting for and why? And is there a politician or candidate that is pushing for another 9/11 investigation?
Well, there's no one who's pushing for it. By definition, if you pushed for it, you wouldn't have a prayer in the election. You know, the press would crucify you. What we can say for certain is that if McCain-Palin win, there will absolutely not be an investigation. You know, McCain wrote the foreword to the Popular Mechanics book. And he was one of the first ones to be saying that 9/11 should be used to attack Iraq. So he's a Mr. Insider there as much as anybody is. If Obama, Biden win, there would at least be a chance for
right.
an investigation. So there you
have
it.
Slim as it may be.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I guess she asked the question to both of us, so to give my half of the answer, I don't vote. I see the election process as totally rigged. Our vote doesn't count, not only because of the Diebold machines that override our voting power, but the candidates are both handpicked. And although I do have to agree, I do see Obama as the better of the two, but that's all we're ever offered, the lesser of the two evils. Well, you know, we're still going to get evil. It's just some evil will be less than others, that's all. But I don't even bother, you know. It's like, why would you go to a casino when you know that the machines are always fixed so you lose, and only a couple individuals will win on occasion, but they're always related to the people that own the casino. You know, nobody outside is going to win. So why would you go to a casino like that? So I believe there's other ways of pushing for change that are more realistic, that don't involve one of their little puppets to dance to their tune. You know, that's my side of the answer. Anyway, we have another question here. This is from Naomi in Canada, and she's asking, as I recall, at the time of the building, the building of the World Trade Center, it was engineered to withstand a direct strike from a commercial airliner. Can you verify this?
You know, it'd be nice if that were Naomi Klein from Canada, from Toronto, but I bet it isn't.
I don't think so.
But could you read it again? I didn't quite get it. Was the building engineered to do what?
She's asking about, you know, how it was designed to withstand a strike from a commercial airliner, you know, the 707 comment.
That's right. And, both of the Twin Towers were certainly engineered to withstand the largest airliner of the time, which was a 707, going, I believe, 600 miles an hour. Here's one place where the NIST really just lies, cheats, because they claim that, they said the 767s that hit the World Trade Centers were bigger, 20% heavier. Yeah, but also they were going much slower, particularly the one that was going 400 and something, again, reportedly. And so the actual damage caused by the 707 going 600 miles an hour would have been greater than a 767 going 400 and something miles an hour. And they just ignore the speed and just focus on the weight. So, you know, every time they have a chance to cheat, they do it.
Right, right. We're actually having Naomi on as a guest, by the way, on September 16th. She's really good. I've interviewed her in the past.
Yeah, I'm very keen on her myself.
Yeah, very well informed. And that's, of
course, it'd be nice if she would come out. Of course, she would no longer get on the mainstream talk shows if she did.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
well,
yeah,
that's like Democracy Now!, what's her name, Amy Goodman.
Yeah.
You know, she has stated that she would like to see another investigation. There's a lot of unanswered questions, but that's about as far as she'll go on that.
Yeah. You know, it's hard
right.
to read Naomi Klein's book and not think that she's thinking about 9/11 as one of these events.
Sure. I think there's a lot of closet 9/11 truthers out there that for obvious reasons, you know.
Yeah, and you know, when I watch her on Charlie Rose, I say, well, you know, she was wise. You know, if you want to get on Charlie Rose and all these shows, you can't say you doubt the official story about 9/11. So she's able to reach an audience that that I can't.
Right, right. Well, we can always hope. Maybe after the Bush administration, if that ever happens, maybe she'll be more apt to come out. Who knows? But anyway, I wanted to come back and ask you some other questions about the commission, 9/11 commission. It's interesting, isn't it, that over the past 4 years since the report, 5 years actually since the report. Oh no, it was 2004, wasn't it? They came out. Yeah,
the commission report came out in July of 2004.
Right. So over the past 4 years, one by one, the heads of it, you know, Keene, Zellico, Hamilton, have all been forced to admit basically that they've been lied to and that the commission is not the final answer. So that's another interesting development, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not as interesting as some people make it out to be because of what I just said about the military, because when they say the military lied to them, they're lying.
Sure.
It's the commission's new story that is the really big lie.
Yeah, they're just pawning
but
blame
definitely,
off.
Definitely.
But nevertheless, that shows that you can't trust the commission by their own testimony.
Well, that's right. Either way, somebody's lying.
Right.
And so we know that for sure. But what they say about the CIA is most important because Keene and Hamilton, you know, they had so little to do with the 9/11 commission report. And I've been saying this all along, but partly on the basis of bits and pieces I got here and there. Whereas when Philip Sheehan's book came out, you know, the New York Times writer who had been assigned to 9/11 and wrote the book on the commission, he makes this very clear that the whole show was run by White House insider Philip Zelikow, who is still in touch with Rove and Rice.
Oh,
even
sure.
though he promised he wouldn't be.
Co-authored a book with Rice years ago.
And that he pretty much determined what went in the report. He only didn't get his way, evidently, on one thing. He wanted to tie 9/11 to Saddam in Iraq. And they did rebel on that. But otherwise, he pretty much called the shot. And it's very clear from hearing Hamilton interviewed that he hardly has any idea what is in the 9/11 commission report.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He said ridiculous things like, well, our theory was the buildings came down because the fire melted the steel, you know, which is absurd. And that Building 7 came down because the...
Well, at least you know there was melted steel.
Yeah. And Building 7 came down because the towers came down and so... made the ground tremble that it knocked Building 7 down. I mean, it's just,
oh my
just
goodness.
Absurd things. And, you know, is he...
Hey, he should work for NIST.
Really, pardon?
He should get a job at NIST. They could use him.
Yeah. Anyway, Sheehan pretty much made very clear that Philip Zelikow, this White House insider, really wrote the report. But nevertheless, in their second book, Keene and Hamilton, what they call the inside story of the 9/11 Commission, without precedent, admitted that they had no way of knowing whether Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the other people that they were getting all their information from were telling the truth, because they weren't allowed to watch them being interviewed. They weren't allowed to... ask them any questions. They weren't allowed to talk to the people who did do the interviews, the CIA guys.
Yeah.
So they said, how could we judge whether their testimony was truthful? So they came right out and admitted, I don't know if they quite understood what they were doing, they undermined the whole report insofar as it claims Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were responsible for 9/11.
Yeah, it's just laughably ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyway, unfortunately, what's that?
I was going to say, they're not the brightest lights on the chandelier.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anyway, unfortunately, we've run out of time. There's so much more that we could be talking about here, but I appreciate you taking the time out, Dr. Griffin, and sharing with us. We're looking forward to your book coming out in another couple of weeks or so. Again, folks, look on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or any other bookstore of your choice. They'll all be having it available. Was there any website or anything you'd like to plug?
Well, if there are any, it's hard to believe anybody listening to your show doesn't know, but in case not, if you're new to 9/11 Truth and you want to see hundreds of very reputable people, engineers, pilots, and all, who reject the official story, the easiest way to do it is on a website called Patriots Question 9/11. Just type that into Google, and you will find it. If you want to get connected with the 9/11 Truth Movement, probably the best way is through 911truth.org.
Okay, excellent. Thanks again, Dr. Griffin, and good night, folks. Thanks for joining us. Our guest next week that I'll be interviewing is Barry Zwicker. Tomorrow night we're going to have Naomi Sheila Nye. She's a poet of Palestine. You don't want to miss that. So we'll see you then. Take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.